So let me first thank the organizers for promoting me from a poster to a hot topic, and I assure you I had nothing to do with it. You'll notice that I'm lowering the high technology aspect of this conference, and the reason is I want to get the experimentalists used to next week. The tradition here is something called chalk talk. You all get a box of chalk, and you're supposed to explain everything on a board. So I'm sort of in between right now, but I'm just warning the experimentalists next week, you'll get lots of chalk. Okay, so I will be therefore talking about some work we've done recently on the two-electron problem and what happens to two electrons in a very intense laser field. Now, this is motivated by this famous picture that Ferenc Kraul showed on the first day of this meeting, the fact that he can make these laser pulses with a well-defined electric field, and he can repeat these electric fields at a very high rate, and they all have the same phase. However, how do you measure this phase? And there have been different discussions about how you measure this electric field in its absolute phase. And we proposed some years ago a very simple way of doing this. It just measured the asymmetry in the ionization with such a pulse. So you come with a laser, the polarization log here, and because a pulse is very short, the field is uneven, then you'll find more electrons coming to the right or to the left. And we showed that the asymmetry, the difference between the right and left number of electrons, can map exactly the vector potential of the field itself, of the pulse itself. Okay? Then I'm going to show you this. So here's a pulse, right, a different carrier, a different carrier envelope, 0, pi over 2, and minus pi, and pi. You see the electric field has a maximum here. Here the electric field is 0 in the middle, and here now the field has changed sign completely. And if you take such a field and apply it to a hydrogen atom and calculate the ionization completely, numerically, exactly, time-dependent Schrödinger equation, we can do this with a supercomputer, and you calculate the difference in electrons left and right, the asymmetry, you find something universal. Well, this is a one-electron problem, which we published. It's in PhysRev. The asymmetry, as a function of this phase, this is the radian, so this is minus pi over 3, this is 0, this is plus pi over 3, etc. You find that you would expect that the asymmetry is 0 for a cosine field. You find the asymmetry for different pulse lengths and different frequencies all cross at minus pi over 3, 0 asymmetry. Whereas there's always a maximum for a 0, cosine pulse. Okay, and it seems to be fairly constant. So this was a universal discovery. But if you do apply SFA theory, you can show, in fact, that for this phi equal to 0, this cosine pulse, the asymmetry should be 0. And what you do is you solve the classical equations of motion for this, assuming there's tunneling, and you find that the drift velocity for this time here and that time here are negative of each other. So the electrons ionizing here will go off to the right, the electrons ionizing here will go off to the left, and the asymmetry should be 0. Now, so the SFA theory is missing the Coulomb potential, because what's happening is when you ionize here, the field keeps increasing, the barrier keeps going down, the electrons going away from the Coulomb potential. However, this electron here, when it ionizes here, the field is decreasing, so the barrier goes up, it feels the Coulomb potential more than that one. So the Coulomb potential is responsible for this asymmetry that you would expect from the so-called semi-classical theory that cannot predict. Okay, and I repeat, at phi equal to 0, you get a maximum in the asymmetry contrary to the semi-classical model. The Coulomb potential is therefore very important. And if you don't believe me, Willem Becker finally did a semi-classical theory, including the Coulomb potential, and he's able to reproduce our exact numerical simulation. So here's the calculation without the Coulomb potential in a semi-classical theory. He's just published a very nice review article that I presume he'll talk about it tomorrow. Without the Coulomb potential, you get zero asymmetry for a cosine pulse, but include the Coulomb potential, then the asymmetry is zero at exactly minus pi over 3, which comes out of the exact calculations. So for single electrons, the carrier envelope is therefore very important, but you get the asymmetry because the combination of the strong field and the Coulomb potential. So this is for the one electron system. A couple of years ago, somebody from Germany, they looked at non-sequential ionization, the effect of carrier envelope on non-sequential ionization, and they discovered that there's an asymmetry in the momentum distribution for different phases of this of the carrier envelope. And for instance, minus 0.5 pi, you find that a lot of electrons are going to the left. At plus 0.5, they're going to the right. At minus 0.3 pi, where I showed you for the single electron, there is a zero symmetry. Now they find a huge asymmetry. And they had a problem. They discovered that there is zero symmetry. In other words, there's equal number of electrons going left and right at a particular phase, but they couldn't measure the phase. So they went to theory. I think they took Willem's program and they said, aha, we can reproduce this experimental distribution of left and right electrons of equal intensity. And they concluded that the asymmetry, that this should be there for 0.2 pi. So they used the theory to ascribe the absolute phase of their laser pulse to be able to characterize their experimental value. So the question, when I saw this, I said, aha, we're getting at minus 0.3 pi for the single electron, zero symmetry. In the case of non-sequential double ionization, where we know from the semi-classical model the first electron is ionized, comes back and hits the second electron, that creates the non-sequential ionization. They're finding that there's a big asymmetry. Okay, so we thought we would do H2, since nobody's done the H2 molecule as far as we know. So here's the H2 molecule. I'm going to show you first one-dimensional results, and then I'll show you two-dimensional results. So here's the ground state. There's the coordinate of electron 1, the coordinate of electron 2, and you see this double hump because both the electron density is on different nuclei. Now, what's interesting is when you do ionization of these things, using huge boxes, which I will explain to you in a moment, this is the ground state of H2. Here's the single electron ionization. And here's the double electron ionization. And you get that famous knee that many people have reported. But I want to point out one thing. If you calculate the exact density, it's called, and you calculate single ionization from the exact single density. Now what you can do is, because we're solving this exactly for the two electrons, we have the exact two electron density. So you can calculate the single ionization rate from the double from the two electron density, or the single ionization rate from the single electron density. And this is where I try to connect with density functional theory. Now, density functional theory says that there is a functional which will give you the exact one electron density. Okay? So what we did is we said, okay, let's take our exact two electron density, integrate out one electron, then we have the exact one electron density. And from it, calculate the double ionization, and it's this line here. It does have that knee that Kieran Burke showed us, but it does not agree with the double ionization calculated from the exact two electron density. Okay, so this is the problem, and Kieran showed this is a problem for density functional theory. Current density functional theory can get the knee, but it's still off by one order of magnitude. Okay, now what we're going to do is we're going to excite the electron here, where double two electron ionization is dominant. There's going to be some one electron ionization, but most of it will be two electron ionization. And see what is electron correlation in this case. Now to do this, we've extended this calculation to two dimensions using a numerical method. I happen to belong to a mathematics research institute in Montreal, Centre de Recherche Mathématique, and there's a paper which up here where we've developed a numerical technique which is always unitary in every time step for calculating, for solving multidimensional partial differential equations. And in this book, in fact, there'll be a chapter on mathematical finance. It turns out people in finance have similar partial differential equations. Okay, now, so we solve the H2 in two dimensions at the following intensity, 4 times 10 to the 15 watts per meter squared, at lambda equal 800 nanometers, at this phase, minus pi over 3, for the one electron, the asymmetry is zero. The for each atom. So here's a picture. Okay. Now, this was done in two dimensions, and but because there's two electrons, it's four dimensions. And what we did is we solved the problem exactly. What is a two-cycle pulse, and the total wave function for the two electrons, we kicked it in a box sufficiently big enough so we don't lose the electrons. No absorbing boundaries, nothing. Now, to give you an idea that two electrons is four dimensions, we used each box of about 500 atomic units. You take 500 atomic units to the fourth power, you need 1 terabyte of memory to be able to do this. Okay? So we tried doing three dimensions, and we needed 1 petabyte of memory. I mean, petawatts are around. But petabyte computers still don't exist. But we tried it on our computer. We have a 1,000 processor machine in my university, thank God. And the first calculation we did, there was a power blackout at university. The big machine just needed so much energy, wanted a transformer, just blew. Now, the unfortunate consequence of this is that every time there's a power blackout at university, it's called the Bandrock effect. Okay. So we calculate this exact two-electron wave function, and now I'm going to do a chalk talk, okay? Because what I'm going to present to you is the angular distribution of the electron in the total wave function that we've calculated at the end of the pulse, okay? So suppose you have an s orbital, okay? There's the radius r, and there's the angle theta, okay? So if you calculate the angle theta of an s orbital, it's going to be flat, right? It's going to be the same for angle theta equal to 0 to 2p. But if I take a p orbital, this theta now will have two peaks, right? One at 0 and one at pi. Now, if I excite this with a laser, with a single photon, I'm going to create a mixture of this. I'm going to get what chemists call a hybrid. It's going to be polarized in front. The angular distribution of my wave function will now just have one peak. But if I increase the intensity of this, the number of photons, the transition probability will go as cosine n to the theta, where n is the number of photons which are absorbed. This thing is going to get narrower and narrower. Okay? So this is what we've done. We've calculated the angle of electron 1 and electron 2 for that wave function, which is in our box, which is the exact wave function after two cycles for this thing here. And you see, here's theta 1, theta 2, and you see immediately there's an asymmetry. Electron 1 is going forward at theta 1, 2 pi. Electron 2 is also going forward. Because of the antisymmetry of the wave function, right, you have this possibility you switch 0 to pi, but you'll notice that there are peaks at pi 0, which means electron 1 is going backwards, electron 2 is going forwards, and because of antisymmetry, electron 1 could go backwards, and electron 2 could go backwards, electron 1 could go forwards. Okay? So this picture tells you that there is a huge asymmetry. Both electrons are going the forward direction at this angle minus pi over 3. It sort of agrees with the non-sequential ionization. Now remember, we've done at 4 times 10 to the 15 watts per meter squared, 85% of the ionization is double ionization. There's only about 10% of single ionization. And yet, electron correlation, the field has a very strong effect. The two electrons are coming forward. Okay. Now let's go to another phase, phi equal to 0, okay, where for the one electron system, there is a maximum asymmetry. Well, you see again, the two electrons are going the forward direction, 0, 2 pi, 2 pi 0. And now you see something here, pi pi, right in the middle. What does this mean? Both electrons are going backwards. Okay. And this, so more or less, fits with the non-sequential experiment of the German group, that there are two momenta, parallel momenta, one large one forward and a small component backwards. Okay. And we keep going. Pi over 3. As you change the carrier envelope phase to pi over 3, the backward component increases. See pi pi, that both electrons are going backward. This peak here corresponds to two electrons going forward. Okay, so there's this phenomenon. And finally at pi over 2, there is mainly this the electron is going backwards, there's very little electrons going forward, and there's also always these funny peaks. One electron is going forwards, one electron is going backwards, and because of one asymmetry, that electron goes backward, this electron goes forward. Okay. Well, what about the momentum distribution? Unfortunately, this didn't come out very well. I tried to print this. At this last phase, pi over 2, where both of the electrons are going backwards, there they are. These are the ATI rings. Now, I just want to show you that this was a numerical, what you might call, feat. You have ATI rings at 20 atomic units, because 4 times 10 to the 15 watt centimeter squared, the part of motive energy is huge, about 100 eV. But we were able to capture this completely, and these are very fast electrons, and after 2 cycles, they were still in our box to show that our calculation is very accurate. They're, unfortunately, this didn't come out very well, but it's something interesting, which does not happen in atoms. There is, over here, there is an ATI peak, an ATI peak, ATI peak. They're split in two because of interference, because of the two centers of the H2. And it'd be interesting to see if somebody could measure this. So in conclusion, let me repeat again. For one electron ionization, one expects no asymmetry for short pulses at intensity 3 times 10 to the 13, and 10, up to 10 to the 14, at the envelope phase minus pi over 3. And a student of Ferenc Krauskorn, Lindner, tried to do the experiment, and here are his experimental results, and you can see the experiments are not too bad. Theory is always better, right? I mean, we're right over here, zero. Maximum at phi equal to zero. That's the result you get in asymmetry for the one electron problem. But when you go, so remember, at minus pi over 3, or at plus, or at plus 2 pi over 3, okay, minus pi over 3, plus 2 pi over 3, there's no asymmetry for one electron. The question is, why is there maximum asymmetry when there are two electrons? 2 pi over 3, at 2 pi over 3, most of the electrons are going backwards. Okay, it's completely different. So we suspect it's electron correlation. And this is surprising. This is 4 times 10 to the 15 watt centimeter squared. And one of the questions we're asking now, we haven't finished the analysis, is it possible for two electrons to recollide together? This is an interesting possibility, and we're not doing calculating the harmonic generation for this system. So basically, that's what we are looking at, and clearly, electron correlation does have a strong effect. Two electrons coming out together at this phase, 2 pi over 3, they come up backwards, whereas a single electron always comes out with zero asymmetry. So that is an open question. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the contribution. Questions?
I just have a brief comment on your comment on TDDFT.
Yeah, well, I've argued with Walter Cohen about this. So.
So you calculated. You have this. To keep in mind that the DFT is always a two-step process. DFT or TDDFT is always a two-step process. In the first step, you solve the Cohen-Sham equations.
Right.
You get the density.
Right.
The second step, from that density, you calculate the observable
right.
that you're interested in. In your case,
we did the other way.
The double ionization probability.
Right.
So you did an exact calculation.
Yeah, and
fully correlated. So you get from that the exact density.
Right.
So that's step one, which in your case you can do exactly.
And from this we calculate the single ionization, double ionization by
double ionization, exactly. But for this, you need a functional, an approximate functional for the observable double ionization.
No, I mean, that's functional theory.
What you have done is you use the Cohen-Sham determinant.
Right, I know the exact density.
You're not supposed to do that.
No, this is what your theorem said. You've got the exact time-dependent density, okay? I use that, and from this, I extract a double ionization by partitioning, and I don't get the same answer as if I did the exact...
What you do is you take the Cohen-Sham wave function and extract from this the double ionization probability. What you're supposed to do is you take the exact density,
right.
construct the functional for this observable,
then
double ionization probability, and then plug in your exact density into that functional. That's the proper procedure. And how this functional looks like, we wrote it down 7 years ago. You can re-express it in terms of the pair correlation function. But what you're doing is you approximate the pair correlation function by the number 1/2, which is the Hartree-Fock approximation.
Okay. My thinking is that if you know the one electron density exactly, you will not get to any two particle operator from it. I mean, it's obvious. You've integrated out the second electron, no matter what you do.
Nope.
Okay.
The density is enough, but you need the functional for that probability, for that observable.
For the two particle probability.
Yes.
So you agree that it is not sufficient to know the one particle density.
You need to know the functional as well.
Okay.
But there exists such a functional, and we know pretty good approximations to it. Just have to look them up.
One density?
Yeah. You need the pair correlation function as a functional of the density.
Well, you know, that paper by Kummel, they did exactly what we did, and of course they got the knee, but they didn't get the right two electron ionization probability.
Of course.
It's off.
Of course. Because you need to know the functional for that observable.
Okay.
Okay, just a comment to the comment. For certain processes, in this case it was single and double excitation, we did just what Hardy mentioned, to construct a functional so that you can actually extract from the exact single particle density a two-point correlation.
Right.
Observables.
I agree. That's why when we did our calculation using just a single exact single density, we did not get the right two-particle ionization. I agree with you. Okay. Yeah. There's one more step. Okay. Fine. Yeah. Yes.
So my question is not on the double ionization, just for single ionization.
Yes.
If what you are saying that the shift of the C phase is due to the Coulomb correction, right?
Yes.
So if I do the single asymmetric experiment with atoms and molecules with same C phase, should I say different shift because molecules has different Coulomb potential as compared to atom?
No, it's very similar actually. There's hardly any difference.
So if you do O2...
Well, but the electron's coming back and it sees a higher charge, that's all. We've gone to higher charges and it doesn't move very much. Yeah.
Okay. So I don't see any further questions, so let's thank the speaker again. And I would also like to thank all speakers of the session and close the session.